Hello, hello. Welcome to this episode of Divine Downloads. I'm your host, Elizabeth Overton, and I'm delighted as usual to be here today. I have none other than Dr. Candy Campbell on the show today. She is the quintessential Renaissance woman, and you are in for a treat today. So Dr. Campbell, she is a doctorally prepared nurse. She also is a clinical nurse leader. She is a continuing education provider, and she also happens to be a fellow in the National Academy of Practice. She is an international speaker, award-winning actor, author, and filmmaker. She works with individuals and corporations to improve leadership, interprofessional communication, and team development. As an actress, Candy has appeared on stage, screen, TV, commercials, voiceovers, you name it. She's been a union actor for many years. In the early 90s, she co-founded an improv and stand-up comedy troupe, The Barely Insane Players. This led to the creation of three acclaimed solo shows, each one about healthcare. The latest is An Evening with Florence Nightingale, The Reluctant Celebrity, which has been performed with rave reviews in four countries so far. She has also written five books and is in the works of working on her sixth, and her documentary film won a prestigious award for the International Medical Media Film Festival and still sells on four continents. And she is also a professor emerita at the University of San Francisco Graduate School of Nursing and health professions. Without further ado, welcome to the show, Dr. Candy Campbell.
Hey, hey, Elizabeth. Good to be with you again.
Oh my goodness, girl. Okay, so we have so much to talk about. And of course, I like to let people know how I meet my guests. And Candy, you and I met at Donna Cardillo's Empowered Nurse Retreat at none other than the Miraval Resort in Tucson, Arizona.
Yes, that was so much fun.
Oh my gosh. I specifically remember like where we were sitting and we were having lunch, and I just remember being in awe of your work, your history, your life. And so what I really try to impart on this platform, Candy, is, you know, it's really like, I believe that nurses, like the world is your oyster. It's just a matter of how creative you want to be. So please, please, please tell our listeners. Now, how do you go from being an actor to a nurse to quite an acclaimed leader in nursing and academia? And now what you're doing on behalf of Florence Nightingale is incredible. So could you tell us about your journey?
Well, thank you for asking that question. Some people think I must be a total nutcase because my history, my CV, if you will, has threads from, it's such a crazy quilt. It has threads from so many different things that early in my life didn't quite make sense because, as you said, I'm trained, classically trained as an actor first, but I was so disappointed, and it's kind of ironic and not a very fun way that now there's the Me Too movement. But you know, this kind of pressuring women for sex is not anything new. And as an actor, oh my gosh, after I graduated from college with my bachelor's in theater, I was cast as a lead in a summer stock play with a man who had been one of my professors. And, you know, this was extra work for him and all of that, and that's great. And the play was Barefoot in the Park. And if you may, it's an old, you know, a Neil Simon play. It's very funny. And I was placed, you know, like I said, I was the ingenue lead, which was, it's a comedy. So usually I play comic characters anyway. And in this particular time, the guy who played the lead opposite me was not there that night. We were still doing blocking. It was early in the show. And to my shock and surprise, this guy, as the director guy, as he was helping me do the blocking, where, you know, he was taking notes because we had to tell the other fellow what we were, you know, planning in terms of the blocking of where the lines were said. There was this one point when he said, you know, and you lay down on the couch and he does this, and he laid on top of me and started, well, I don't need to go any further. It was horrible. And as a young actor, I was like 21 or 22. Yeah, 21 when I graduated from college. And this was an old man. He was like 40. You know, he was really old to me. And I had babysat his kids, and I was so mortified that this happened. I just basically threw him across the room and said, "What are you doing?" And he told me he was separated from his wife and blah, blah. Anyway, but he said to me, you know, you are going to New York or LA. You're pursuing your dream after this show. What do you think happens in the theater? This is the way it goes. And I said, not with me. And so I said, I quit. I walked off the set. He said, where are you going? I said, I quit. He goes, you mean tonight? I said, no, I quit this show. He said, you can't do that. Well, I did. And I didn't act again for 10 years. I was so angry. And in the meantime, I had to figure out what to do. And I was very interested as a young person. And you remember, I'm pretty old, so there weren't all that many professions open to women at the time. And so one of the things that I thought was pretty adventurous, I always wanted to be a nurse, but my high school counselor told me that based on my C's and B's in the sciences and my over-the-top SAT scores on reading and comprehension, that probably I'd never pass organic chem, but that I would do well teaching English or something like that. So I had a minor in education, but I didn't know what I wanted, but I wanted to see the world. And I had this idea in the back of my head. I thought, if I get to travel some, then one of the things that I want to do is I want to have a career as an actor, and I'll do it my way. I don't know what that looks like yet, but I'm going to get as many tools as possible. So I say, providentially enough, there were auditions, if you will, interviews. Pan Am was coming to town, and my mother pointed it out because I was basically at home in a sort of a nothing job, biding my time while I figured out life. And she said, "Hey, Pan Am's in town. Why don't you try out? Because you always wanted to travel." And I had traveled before. I spent my junior semester I spent in Vienna, and I really, you know, loved to travel. So, well, long story short, they hired me. So what happened was I started studying language dialects as an actor everywhere I lived. And happily enough, I got to live in 6 cities in 5 years that I flew. So one of the things that I did afterwards was when I got an agent, I started doing voiceovers. And, you know, people always say, "Oh, have I heard any of your commercials?" And, you know, the fact is you might have, but you might not have recognized my voice because I might have sounded entirely different. But one of my signature stories, talking about how do you combine nursing and this other acting thing, is that I say I got the call to be a nurse 30,000 feet up when on this big 747, it was full. We were flying between New Delhi, India and Karachi, Pakistan, which for those people who haven't been on that particular flight is about four and a half hours, I think. And There were mostly dual national people there because, you know, India and Pakistan, they're right next to each other. There are a lot of people who have, you know, like around here, and you might have relatives in Canada, whatever. It's a different country, but, you know, you go and you visit your folks. And there were an assortment of families on that plane, and it was packed. There were mothers and fathers and grandfathers and babies and ducks and anything that would fit under the seat in front, right? And what happened was that, you know, in the day, everybody was served a three-course meal, hot meal, in economy section too. So chicken, fish, or steak. And after the meal was served, we hit some really bad turbulence to the point where, you know, the captain had to sit down. So I was sitting with my seat mate in the rear of the plane, observing 124 people. And then we took a really big dive and we watched ribbons of vomit. It looked like 124 people vomiting in unison. And it was that day that I learned there are two kinds of people in the world. There are those that run to hide when they see such like that, and there are those that run to help. And I did the second thing, and she did the first thing. She ran off. And I just, you know, did what I could. There were blankets, you know, everybody had a blanket then. So I'm just, you know, covering up the mess and whatever. Finally, she came back. She said, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you could even manage this, you know." And I said, "Well, aside from the fact that it was very sad that all these people were sick at once, you know, if you remember the vision of 124 people vomiting ribbons of vomit, it was kind of artistic." And she said, "You have that sixth sense of humor."
Oh, the visual. Oh.
And so just coincidentally, when we had taken off that day, you know, we had a long taxi and a long wait before we took off. We were just chatting, she and we were both kind of sick and tired of flying and, you know, being gone all the time. And so I had told her, you know, I want to do something that makes a difference in somebody's life. And I kind of wish that I was smart enough to go to nursing school. And after that, she said, you know, you got that sixth sense of humor. I think you're smart enough. You ought to try it. So that's really how I started on the path to be a nurse.
I love this. And of course, what you're doing now is first full circle when you said these things didn't seem to make sense. And of course, I think it's so, well, to me, I believe that everything is divinely orchestrated way before it ever manifests, right? In the physical mm-hmm. world. So it's like, this was all part of your, it's like the woven quilt, right? Mm-hmm. The tapestry, none of it's an accident or a coincidence. and the visual, I mean, people are like in their cars, like, "Oh my, really? Like, come on now." Oh my gosh. Okay. So how soon after that experience did you enroll, start nursing school, stop attending flights, those types of things?
Okay. Well, at that time I was, as I recall, I might've been based in Hawaii. Or I might have gone back to LA. I can't remember. I had so many different places that I actually lived. I think it was Hawaii. But I'm from Oregon originally. So I figured, well, I'll go home and maybe live with my parents for a bit until I can figure out the finances. And I will take a second bachelor's in nursing. So in that time, they were telling me that I was going to be a post-baccalaureate, and that they didn't offer anything around where I was. They didn't offer a diploma or an AARN or anything. So then I did wind up being LA-based because it took me a while to, you know, think about it and figure it out. And so when I was in LA, then they said, well, there's you know, we have junior colleges and anybody can go to junior college. Doesn't matter what other degree you have, if you can just get into the program. So I, again, just sort of forged ahead and started, I had a little bit of savings and I was newly married. So I got a job as a CNA, a nurse assistant, as soon as I applied for nursing school and got accepted. So that all took, I think, the better part of a year to sort of sort it out and, you know, actually get into nursing school because I had to take prerequisites. It had been just 5 years since I'd been in school. And you know, colleges are funny. They think you might forget something after 5 years. So I had to retake a bunch of things, including, you know, anatomy, physiology, microbiology, blah, blah, all that stuff I had to take. So took a while. Yeah, took a while.
Okay, so I love how there is no one path, right? Like this is perfect example. And I really think it's important because I feel like it doesn't matter if it's about someone telling a nurse, you know, the golden rule, the golden standard, you have to do X, Y, and Z before you do X, Y, Z. It's like, it's so important, I think, to know that there is no one path. What's right for you is not going to be what's right for me or vice versa. And so I just love how your story it totally exemplifies this, right? You, and it's cool, well, that you had this experience acting, you know, that really, obviously, rightfully so, left a bad taste in your mouth and was very upsetting. And so it's like using your pain to like separate yourself from that to figure out, you know, what's the next step. And now let's talk about how you were able to bring acting back into the fold and back into the mix. What was the time between when you, you know, started practicing nursing after school that you really started to dip your toes back in the acting world?
Well, I was living in LA at the time, went to school in LA, and it wasn't until I started having kids and actually, come to think of it, we moved from Southern California up to the mountains of California, the Southern California mountains. We're living in a city called Big Bear Lake, and it's beautiful. It's a smaller population unless it's a ski weekend because it's a ski town. And, you know, usually there's like, well, there was, I don't know what it is now, but there was 15,000 people in the whole town. And then, you know, it had one stoplight. And then on a big weekend, there was like 150,000. And all that to say, the arts in the schools is where I started because when my oldest daughter was, I think, 10, she wanted to, or I think her teacher saw something in her and she wanted, the teacher wanted my daughter to try out for a Christmas show. And it was going to be at the local auditorium. And, you know, this is typical of little towns. They have over the years erected a beautiful regional center that because the town is so small, it really doesn't have a lot that they offer during the year. And it sits there and it's gorgeous. I mean, a full-on huge proscenium stage with all the lights and everything. Orchestra pit. I mean, they had everything there. And I'm sure it probably sat 1,000 people. And so every year they would have a big, you know, Christmas play. This association would put it on. And they had a lot of people who retired up there from LA. And they had a dynamite director and some other artists up there. And so my daughter, anyway, went to the rehearsal or the auditions. And during that time, they were doing a really fun, it's fun that we're talking right now during Christmas. This is about the time that this was. They were casting the best Christmas pageant ever, if you've ever seen that. It's a really cute show. about a bunch of little kids who've never been to church, and they come and they bring, you know, like a turkey to the baby Jesus and stuff like that, or a ham or something. I don't remember. Anyway, it's a very cute, it's a comedy show. And during these auditions, there were so many kids trying out, because I think there's like 8 children in this thing. Plus, there's some other comic roles. And the director was asking for help because his assistant had some sort of emergency during the audition, and she had to leave. So there was nobody to read lines with the kids, right? And so he said, he looked out into the audience, and it's funny, Elizabeth, I haven't even thought about this for like years. He looked out in the audience, and here are, you know, scattered bunch of parents sitting there. He goes, does any of you, would any of you mind coming up here and, you know, just reading the lines? You don't have to act it or anything, but the kids really need somebody to, you know, audition with. So nobody was raising their hand. So I thought, okay, I'll do it. Cause you know, cold reading is a skill that I have. So I got up there, sat on the stool. I'd never read the play, but it was clear to me. It was fun. I had fun reading all these roles. And then at the end, you know, everybody was leaving. And as I was leaving the stage, he said, wait a minute. Can I talk to you for a minute? I said, yeah, sure. He goes, who are you? And why don't I know you? I told him. And he said, well, you will be in the play, won't you? So of course, that was the first play that I was in, and I had a hilarious role as this lady, Mrs. Anderson was the name of the part, and she's broken her leg, and she's kind of the witch of the whole play. Anyway, it's very funny. And so that was my foray back, and the funny thing is, of course, my daughter was cast in the role that she wanted. So my very first time back on stage was with my daughter, and she had such fun. And she, it turns out she's a very good actress too. She had such fun that, and you know, then I knew these people. And so they had a Shakespeare company, and I cut my teeth on Shakespeare. So I did, you know, a few seasons of Shakespeare up there in the mountains. And, you know, I did what I could, and I was also a nurse, and it was fun.
I mean, I'm a very visual person. So when you're telling this story, you're all sitting in the seats, right? And it's like when they call on the plane, are there any nurses or doctors on this flight? And you're like, okay, no one's answering. So, and again, it's like, I just think it's so cool when you talk about your story. It's like, to me, I see it as like, I could see your life in a movie, right? Like these unseeming events that aren't really connected, but they're all connected. And so I know that you had this really cool improv, the Brilliant Same Players, and also this, you know, this work with the improv. So when did that kind of start to come into the mix? Because I think I love Beth Boynton in medical improv. I think And I love that you studied language, because I'm obsessed with language. I think it's such a cool tool that we have, right? And so can you tell us a little bit about what, for people that don't know, what medical improv is, or improv anyway, and how did that start to come into your tapestry of your life?
Okay. Sure. Well, you know, as life rolled along, my husband and I were divorced, and that happened in 1992, and I became the sole support of 3 children at that time, aged 8, 11, and 13, and I moved up to the San Francisco area to be closer to family, the brother who and wonderful sister-in-law who's like my sister, who took us in and you know, basically had to remake my life. And after about, I don't know, several months, I just was so tired of being sick and tired and unhappy and, you know, wah, wah, wah. I I'm not usually like that. And I was trying to, you know, keep on keeping on. And I saw an article in the newspaper. You remember those, Lisbeth? They used to come every day.
Yes, I do.
And I saw an article in the community section that was interviewing a lady who was a director of a thing called the Clean Comedy Company. And I thought, well, that's interesting. It wasn't very expensive to take some lessons, and it was close to me. So I had been in counseling because the court ordered counseling. And when I went to, you know, I only could afford so many times to go. And the last time, the counselor said to me, okay, well, since, you know, you're not coming back and everything, let's, you know, kind of put a button on it. And, you know, let me ask you about your action items and what would you do if there were no limitations? What would you do? And it didn't take me long to say, I would continue acting because I love being in comedy. It gives me so much joy. And she said, well, how are you going to make that happen? And I said, I don't know. I got to just put it out to the universe. So shortly after, then I read this thing about the Clean Comedy Company. I thought, well, can't hurt to just go. I think the first sitting in on a class was free. And I met some other people. We had a hoot, laughing all the time. And it was therapeutic, you know? And four of us, after a few months, decided that we would break off from this instructor who we'd sort of had enough of. And in the meantime, those people were all taking improv classes. And this was in the early 90s. And I saw what it did to their stand-up routines. It made them freer. Whereas I was sort of starting out, I bombed so many times. I was like robo-comic. You know, I had memory, which is sort of what... It wasn't all my fault. I mean, that's what the instructor was telling us to do. And so, you know, as an actor, it didn't feel right either. And then suddenly to take improv, I just hadn't had so much fun ever that I can remember. And so the four of us split off, started our own company. We were together about 3 years playing in the East Bay of the San Francisco area, which is huge. You know, the city of San Francisco physically is pretty small. The East Bay and, well, the South and the North, you know, people just like anywhere. If you can't afford to live in the metropolis, you live outside. So in the early 90s, we were actually the first and only improv company in that area. So we didn't have any problem finding venues and doing gigs. We played coffee houses and we played, we would rent theaters that were, you know, between shows, and we'd do a Friday, Saturday, or a Sunday, whatever. We did everything. We sold the tickets. We, you know, were on the stage, and we didn't need much because improv, you know, you don't have any props or anything. And it was just so much fun. And then, you know, Lisbeth, I don't know how much you know about theater companies, but I like to say they're pretty amorphous. You know, life happens, right? People come, people go. So after about 3 years, suffice it to say that there were only two of us left. And we decided that we would regroup, change our business model, and that we would look for gigs in associations. And since I was a nurse and I was already a member of a few associations, I was a neonatal nurse at the time. And so we approached a local chapter of a nursing association that I belong to and sold them on the idea of the two of us, that we were two, the two women of the group were left, that we would do a show for, I think it was 60 Minutes Entertainment again in December. It was going to be their December meeting with entertainment. And they paid us half up front. And this was, I think we booked it in, I want to say June or July. And so we set to work, this other gal and I, and we met once a week. We did new material for stand-up, and we figured out some sketch comedy and some improv that we could do together, just two people, and maybe even involve some audience members or something like that. And then we were supposed to perform the first week in December. On Labor Day, I got a call from this woman, and she was not in a good place. She and her husband were going to get a divorce. And so she said, "I just can't do the show." And I said, "Oh no." And she said, "You know, I'm sorry, you'll just have to call and cancel." So I hung up with her and I thought, there's no way I'm going to cancel. So I honestly, Lisbeth, you talk about things being divinely appointed. I was weeping and gnashing my teeth. I just sort of fell on the floor screaming and crying. I didn't know what was going to happen. And when I got off the floor, wiped my tears, just thought, you know something? I'm going to have to make lemonades out of this. I'm going to have to look at this as an opportunity. It scared me to death. But what was I going to do? It was my professional group. And I wanted to keep the money. I needed the money. So I thought, well, I already had an agent. I was already doing some voiceover on the side. And that was, you know, that was a good little thing. But this was, I could see that there would be a market for this. So I forgot to tell you something. One of the things that this other woman had told me before we hung up was that all of the material that we worked on together was part of her intellectual property. And she told me not to use any of what we had come up with. And so you see, at first I was really angry, and that's why I was frustrated and crying, because I thought, what am I going to do? But Lisbeth, and I know you know this, just when you think your back is against the wall, and as nurses, this happens too often sometimes, you know, the expectation of what you thought was going to happen is wiped away, and suddenly you're in some sort of traumatic situation. To me, it was a crisis. The universe has a way, if you're open to it, of giving you what you need. And so I just said, oh God, please help me. And I kind of stewed about it for a day. And then I remember the next day I had off, I woke up, and I don't remember what else I was doing. I just know that I can tell you that within 3 weeks, I had the basis of my very first one-person show. And it was 12 characters. It was kind of a trunk show. I had little props. And there was just going to be, you know, we had booked it as an improv show. It was just going to be in a convention, you know, in a hotel convention room. So it wasn't any great shakes. There was no set. It was just, you know, those risers, you know, with steps up. So I brought this, you know, big suitcase, and it was, you know, basically 12 comedy routines of different crazy characters that I came up with that all had to do with healthcare. You know, there was the home visit nurse and the psychotic psychiatric nurse, and different things. They were basically monologues. And I would turn around and put on a hat, or, you know, put on a jacket or something, I changed the costume, and the audience loved it. So that was the first time. It gave me confidence that such a thing could happen.
I absolutely love this story. Okay, so what's that that saying, necessity is the mother of invention?
Hmm.
I loved your story, and again, the visual of you on the floor and like being pissed and, you know, all the work that you had done with this woman, and she's like, well, that's my intellectual property. And I think success, I mean, I'm not into like revenge, however, success and happiness to me is like, what better could you have, right? It's like, and I didn't realize that what you were doing were related to healthcare. So now it totally makes sense. So we're going to bring this around full circle. So for those of you who are listening, who might not be a nurse, the founder of modern nursing is none other than this incredible woman, Florence Nightingale. She was born in a well-to-do family in Italy in 1820, I believe, if I have that right. Mm-hmm. And she is the founder of modern nursing and did so much for nursing during the Crimean War, and was able to reduce deaths from infection by 2/3. Back in that day, like, I just can't even wrap my brain around what she has done for the profession and really increasing the standards. And so, Candy, won't you please tell us about your relationship with Florence and sort of how you pivoted, I guess is the word, from this one-person show with 12 characters to really the embodiment of this incredible human as Florence.
Ah, well, thank you. That is quite another story. suffice it to say that there was another show in between that show. And I have to go back even further. Before the first one-person show, when we were still an improv company, in the year was 1995, you know, people always come up to you after the show and say things like, oh, you couldn't possibly, you know, must have rehearsed that. And we would always say, no, you know, that really was on the fly. We don't plan anything. We rehearse, but those, you'll never see what we rehearsed. You know, it's improv. So one night, this guy named Michael from a Silicon Valley company came up and he said to the four of us, could you guys come to our company and teach my engineers how to play nice with each other? Because, you know, they are at loggerheads. They're not doing well. And so, as it turned out, I was the only person that had any kind of experience in curriculum development or anything like that. And also, I don't know whether it was meant to be or not, but nobody else could get that particular, I don't know, I was the only one who would show up that day. So that was the very first time that I started teaching improv. And again, because of my acting background, then I started teaching. Once that happened, then I went to other businesses. And then because it was such fun to teach improv, it was, you know, something that wasn't even on my radar. A local acting company heard and got a hold of me, and I started teaching, one acting school, another comedy school. And, you know, it's just one of those things that when I had some free time, it was a little bit of money, and, you know, all these things added up. But then, like I said, so I continued that after the four of us disbanded and after I did that first one-person show. And the wonderful thing about that first show was that when you do a keynote or when you do a show, usually there's spin-off. You know, people come up to you afterwards and say, oh, well, I got to tell you, it was funny. With that very first show, somebody, you know, that my headshots were on the table. I didn't know what else. I just had them out there on the table as, you know, with a one sheet. And people would come up to me and they wanted me to give them my autograph. And So my daughter was standing there. She was with me that night, and she was like 16, my middle daughter then. And somebody shoved this headshot in front of me and said, I want your autograph. I think you're going to be big someday. I just laughed. And my daughter elbows me. She goes, sign it. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I wrote my name, C. Campbell, RN, you know, like I did so many times on the charts. I wrote it like I was charting.
That is adorable.
Anyway, so you're talking about Florence Nightingale. Okay, well then time went on and there was a second show, and that was something that was a full show that ran in the city of San Francisco, that ran for a few weeks. And that was called Full Frontal Nursing, a Comedy with Dark Spots. So my object with that one was to tell the realities of what it's like in the HMO when that started to come out. That was the late 90s. You know, the crunch of more patients and less staffing, and the problems that we had within healthcare, different things. There were a lot of funny things, but some poignant things too. And so my object was, as always, I think, as an actor, to give people something to think about and really touch their heart, but to give them a lot to laugh about too. So that was quite a good success, and got written up in Backstage West as one of the 10 to watch in the San Francisco Fringe. And then, like I said, it got picked up by another theater and ran for a few weeks. So that allowed me, because I did not only, of course, did I write the show, but there was a couple of songs in there that I wrote the lyrics to. And because of the way ASCAP works, you know, that's the composer songwriter union. There were enough, it was like a 90 seat or 100 seat theater, and pretty much filling it most of the time. I had enough audience and singing my original songs in character. They were comic songs, you know. And so I got into ASCAP that way, and got into Equity, and I had already been in AFTRA, which is the radio TV union, because of my voiceovers. And so that was the end of the 90s, and the next project was this film. And I don't think we're really going to go into that today, but that was about a 5-year project. So when it was done, I was happy, didn't know what was going to be next in terms of acting or anything. I got a role on, what do you call it? It was a NBC show that was filmed in San Francisco. It only ran 2 seasons, and I was only on it the first season. It was called Trauma. And of course, I played an ER, the supervisor of the ER. I was the only one who knew what to do with the equipment that they brought in for props.
I love it.
I was hooking up the extras to the EKG machines and taking their blood pressure, and when we weren't filming, and telling them, man, are you on medication? This is high. I was like, it was so funny. Anyway, but I wasn't really thinking about Nightingale. It's just that something happened. Again, another pivot point. In 2004, I believe it was, I noticed I was back on stage. I was doing musicals in San Francisco area, and I was in Funny Girl, played a supporting lead in that as the mother of the character that Barbara Streisand played on Broadway. Anyway, there was a lot of dancing in that show, and I noticed my feet were killing me. during those dance numbers. And so bad between that and then, you know, working 12-hour shifts, right? I worked many, many years in labor and delivery, and then the most years in the NICU. And there's a lot of standing still in that by the isolates. My feet were killing me. So the end of that story is that I wound up between 04 and 05 having 5 foot surgeries. And that turned the path again, because it was really the end of my bedside nursing career. And I had not planned on taking a master's, no less a doctorate. But during those times, I started reading and going to grad school, and I started reading Florence Nightingale's works. Well, in 2010, I don't know if you remember it, Elizabeth, but 2010, there was 100th anniversary of Nightingale's death, which I thought it was kind of a weird thing to celebrate somebody's death. But what happened was really interesting. There is a Nightingale scholar in Canada who's not actually a nurse. She's a sociologist. Lynn McDonald is her name. She's a really neat gal. And because she has a cousin that lives in London, in the 70s, when she, as a sociologist, was looking to do her PhD on a feminist who was a social reformer, she, in her research, found Florence Nightingale and learned that not far from where her cousin lived, at the time it was the British Museum or the British Library, one of the two, I can't remember, the actual more than 15,000 letters of Florence Nightingale were housed. And Lynn is the person who, page by page, read all of this. It's very difficult to read Nightingale's writing. You know, she was in a hurry a lot, and it's kind of chicken scratches. And Lynn did the annotations because she figured out what the words were. And then she fitted it together with a history. And she is the preeminent Nightingale scholar. And she wrote 5 volumes of these letters. Well, the reason I got to know them in 2010 is because she is such an interesting person and such a reformer herself. She convinced the British, it was the Nightingale Foundation that technically owns these, I believe. Anyway, she got permission to have them put these volumes online so that everybody could read them. And I discovered it because by this time I was a university professor, and I just couldn't put them down. Elizabeth, you talk about my life being like a movie. Oh my gosh, hers was like a movie. When I was reading about her life, I just couldn't put it down. And this is 5 volumes. It's a lot. Plus, I learned that she had written approximately 200 books and articles, and I got a hold of as much as I could. And for the next 3 or 4 years, some people read novels or bios or something. I was reading Nightingale. I could not get enough. So again, another turning point. I was at, by this time, you know, I had spoken to several places. I'm a member of the National Speakers Association. And I was at here's a funny thing. It was a Christmas party. Isn't it interesting? Christmas is kind of a theme here.
There's a theme here.
So I'm at a Christmas party at a National Speakers Association of Northern California party. And I'm talking about my doctorate. My doctoral work I wrote a dissertation and did a research study at Stanford on interprofessional communication using the applied improvisational exercises. And that was evidently, as far as I know, it's the only one of its kind. And I was talking about the fact that I just finished that up and everything, but one of my NSA friends overheard me waxing poetic about Nightingale, and he turned around, and you can just see, his name is Barry Wishner, he's such a funny guy. Now, this drink in his hand and his Santa hat on, and he says, "Now, wait a minute, professor." He says, "I thought you were all about improv, but it sounds like you've got some sort of love affair going with this Florence Nightingale." And I said, "Well, I just can't stop reading. She's so interesting." And he goes, wait a minute. "Aren't you an actor?" I'm like, "Well, yeah." He goes, "Didn't I just hear you on the radio doing it?" Because I did some, you know, commercial public service announcement that was all over the radio. And he goes, and I said, yes. He goes, "Wait a minute. You're a nurse and an actor, and you've had 2 one-person shows, and this isn't your third show? Huh? What? I don't get it." And it was like, oh, aha moment. Oh my gosh. All I could think of, Lisbeth, was, oh shoot. I just finished the dissertation a year ago. I'm too tired to try. I know how hard it is to create a one-person show. I'm like, oh no, another project. I never wanted to even do the film. I never thought that would take 5 years. It's like the universe, you know, has directed me to do something. So anyway, there you have it. I did it.
Wow. Well, you know, there's a saying, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I'm seeing a book of your similar to Nightingale's works. I'm seeing a book about Dr. Candy Campbell's works, and I would love, for the sake of time, I want to make sure we have time to talk about this incredible event that will mark the bicentennial anniversary of Florence Nightingale. That you have. Wow. Just wow. Okay. I want to make sure we talk about that. And I think this might be a wonderful time to invite Florence onto the broadcast. Is she available?
Well, I'm told that because of the 21st century time travel and because the iPhones are so amazing, there's an app for that.
Okay. Fantastic. Because I have one really important question I would love to ask her, because I think we could use her wisdom for certain if she would be available.
Okay, just let me make sure that I have the app queued up. Okay.
Yes.
All right, just a minute. I think here she comes.
Hello, Florence.
Who am I speaking to?
Hello, this is Elizabeth Overton of the Divine Downloads podcast.
And Miss Overton, are you perhaps a nurse?
Well, and as a matter of fact, I am, Florence, and I'm just delighted to be graced with your presence today.
It is, the pleasure is all mine.
Oh, my goodness. I want to thank you for everything that you did for humanity, and especially the nursing profession.
You are welcome, my dear. Believe me, it warms the cockles of my heart that you and other nurses are carrying the torch, as it were.
Oh my goodness, this is so amazing. Okay, so I have a question for you, Florence.
Yes.
And that is this. Certainly during your time in caring for the soldiers, and the conditions were so absolutely horrendous in the hospitals and on the fields during the war. What I would love to know is, during the time that we are in now, it's not so much that the infection rates and things like that are causing a problem as it is, let's just say, the greed and the way that healthcare is focusing, the focus is no longer on the patient. Do you have any words of wisdom for nurses to stay the course and to be the best advocate for both nurses, ourselves, and the patients?
Oh my goodness, my dear. If I might say, the problem within healthcare, I would say, aside from all the technological advances that you have, is quite amazing. The problem within nursing remains the same. We are fatigued. We have not enough staff, not enough funding, and we grow weary. The advice is always to carry on, keep the focus, understand that the most you can do is spread kindness, that the art of nursing is the actual heart of nursing.
Oh my goodness. I received that, and I know that the listeners receive that. So I want to thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I know that you're very busy, so I will let you get back to what you're doing, and just really thank you.
Thank you, my dear. My chariot awaits. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta. Oh my gosh, so amazing. Oh, so, so cool.
Oh, I'm back.
That's so fantastic. Oh my word. Having never seen you perform, I'm blown away. Like, holy moly. Wow. 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 Thank you so much for providing that.
You're welcome.
Incredible experience.
Well, may I just give a plug and tell your listeners, I have an agent, and if they want to go to the website to learn a little bit more, the website name is a little bit different. It's, I had to shorten, you know, the title. So it's florencenightingalelive.com. And then they can learn more about the tour. And if you would like Miss Nightingale to come during the year 2020, we have some dates available. And we have just selected dates available. So we're going all over the place. We started the tour a couple of weeks ago, actually in Missouri. And Miss Nightingale had many new fans there. And may I say, we are planning, I'm about this tour in May.
Absolutely. Tell the listeners about this incredible opportunity.
Well, one of the things that, as you all know, and Lisbeth, I know this is a big thing in nursing here in the States, is that next year, 2020, is the bicentenary, like you mentioned, of her 200th birthday. Well, you know, the city of London is going all out too. And because Lynn MacDonald, the wonderful woman I told you about, the preeminent Nightingale scholar, has become a friend of mine. She found me. She and I think I had other friends like Barbara Dorsey, who's also another Nightingale scholar. So they've inducted me into the Nightingale Society of Scholars and Historians. And they were the ones last year that said, oh my goodness, we are going to go over there in May of 2020. And I said, yes, and I want to bring a group of fun friends with me because I lived in London for 2 years. I know London, and I also know that Nightingale loved both London and Paris, and I got these ideas percolating in my head. And I just thought, wouldn't it be fun to get a small, like I said, no more than 20 people, fun people who are interested in history, who don't just want to go on a great big tour with all these other people that you don't know and just, you know, get on and off a bus. No, we are going to go. Yes, we're going to hit all the high points. You know, we're going to Windsor Castle and we're going to Stonehenge and Buckingham Palace and all of that. We're doing all of that, but we're also doing things like going to Marie Curie's museum and doing seeing where some of the Nightingale artifacts are held. We're going to go in Paris to the medical museum there, and we're going, of course, we'll be going to Versailles and take a trip on the Seine and things like that, but we're also going to see that exhibition. Oh my gosh, Elizabeth, I don't know if you saw it when it was here in America. It is actually cadavers, and they are posed in art museum fashion to show anatomy and physiology and the amazing work of art that the human body is. We're going to go to that display. We're going to go to Louis Pasteur's lab museum. Oh my goodness, so many things. And I'm going to be your guide, as well as we're going to have, oh, the whole trip to Paris is all, you know, you don't have to worry about luggage or anything like that. It's all taken care of. And the most amazing thing, I was just telling you this yesterday. Yesterday, I found out that because of the British problems, I'm so sorry they're having, you know, trauma about the Brexit and everything, and it's wreaking havoc with the British pound. But as American travelers, the travel company has been able to, for the second time and the last time, reduce the amount of money that we have to pay for this tour. Oh my gosh. For it includes all the full breakfast. There's two big group dinners. There's all the admissions, all the hotel taxes, and all of everything is going to cost you $336 a day for 10 days. I can't believe it. It's amazing.
That is okay. People, this is it still May 7th through the 18th, right?
Yeah. We're flying over on May 7th.
Okay. Okay, so, and that information is on the website, FlorenceNightingaleLive.com?
Actually, that website, I think that one has it, but I'm not sure. I think that's my other website. It's CandyCampbell.com.
Got it. And we'll put all this in the show notes so people don't have to worry about scrambling, writing things down. Listen, is this... I mean, I just want to go abroad for a semester in nursing school. Could this turn into like a semester abroad, Candy, or what?
Oh, I don't know. But
hello?
There's
oh my word. This has been I'm just in awe of, you said in the beginning of the show, like I think you used the word crazy. I would say you're a very courageous woman. You're a very courageous human. And I love what you're doing for humanity. I love what you're doing for the nursing profession. I love what you're doing for, talk about like living and thinking outside the box. Like, who knew that you could combine a love for acting, a love of the profession of nursing? I mean, look what you have created. Like, anything's possible. Look what you have done. It's amazing. Bravo.
Well, thank you. Thank you. But as you know, it wasn't just me. You know, the universe gives you these opportunities. And, you know, one of my favorite writers is Julia Cameron, who did The Artist's Way. And in that book, which really was, it's kind of like the artist's Bible,
not to denigrate the actual Bible, which is one of my favorite works, but Julia Cameron has a way of saying to people who think, oh, I'm not an artist, that we're all born with a capacity to be open, to create. And whatever, she makes a good point, I think. She says that whatever you are interested in, and those things are, you know, as wide as the whole world. There are so many different things in the world to be interested in. She said, if you're drawn to something, you're curious about it. If you look into it and start practicing it, no matter what it is, even if they, you know, you think you have no talent in that, if you practice it, you will get better. And maybe that's the universe sort of, you know, steering you in the direction of something that's supposed to happen, but you don't know unless you say yes. And that's what improv is all about.
So beautifully stated. I love Julia Cameron. I have her book, The Artist's Way. Absolutely. I learned that about that in nutrition school of all places, but any Hoosiers. I know that you shared a couple, to me, a divine download from what you shared was when you were on the floor and that woman said, I cannot partake in this two-person show. Is there a different download that you would want to share before we round out this beautiful conversation, Miss Candy?
You know, the other one that I want to tell you about is that when I had an idea that was even more out of my bailiwick, if you will, I had done then 2 one-person shows, and somebody came backstage and said to me, what's your next project? And I said, oh, I don't know, but I think I'm going to try and get somebody to produce a documentary film about something that's happening in the NICU that would be a great documentary. And so I explained to this friend that as a NICU nurse, and that was in 1997, I think, after that show, as a NICU nurse, and I'm still working as a NICU nurse, we noticed that the technology for keeping up these little babies alive, gosh, we were just, you know, saving smaller and smaller babies. And because I, you know, I had an agent in San Francisco, I was doing all these voiceovers and, you know, I knew, you know, like commercials. I knew a fair amount of people who do this kind of thing for a living. And I pitched this idea to all of them frequently. And they all told me the same thing. Listen, if you're really passionate about this idea and it's keeping you awake at night, which is what I was telling them, it's probably meant for you to do it. And I was kicking and screaming, no. That would mean I have to go to film school. I can't afford that. I've got, you know, kids at home and they're teenagers and they're eating me out of house and home, and I can't do it. I can't afford equipment. There's no way. And they were like, whatever then. And you know, I couldn't sleep. And I just went, just like that on the floor moment, I went, oh my goodness, am I really going to have to do this? It is so uncomfortable to have to go back to film school, and, you know, but it all worked out. It all worked out. Not only did it work out that I learned what I needed to learn, and believe me, if somebody had told me, go ahead, put your first foot on this path, it will take you 5 years, but it'll be wonderful, and it will win a wonderful international award and bless people for years, I would have said, wait a minute, 5 years? I don't know if I'm interested. Because as it turned out, I learned more about research and how to do qualitative research, and I followed
the people that are in the film. I followed these families for 3 years. And of course, I'm not in the film, but I learned about the craft of filmmaking and storytelling and script writing. And I was uncomfortable many times, very uncomfortable. But the fact is that once I got the rough footage and started showing it to people, people started cutting me checks. Suddenly, I was getting sponsors. People were talking about what I was doing. It was so uncomfortable because all I could think of is, I'm going to fail. And it took me twice as long. It wouldn't have taken 5 years if I was better at this cutting film thing. It took me twice as long to learn it. And it was all worth it. So the download is, if you are willing to get out of your comfort zone, you will be able, if you follow that passion, you'll be able to do things you never thought possible, which is basically, by the way, Lisbeth, the same way I got to write the first children's book. I'm like, oh no, are you kidding? Nobody's written that book. My mom is a nurse. I wanted to just give it to a friend who was pregnant. I thought, sure, I had seen the book. And I looked everywhere. I couldn't find it. I looked up and said, oh my goodness, does that mean I'm supposed to write this book? Well, it's a theme here.
Oh, that's such poignant advice. If you are willing to get out of your comfort zone, you will, and follow the passion, you will be able to do the things that you never imagined possible. I couldn't agree more. It's such a beautiful way. So I know that there are lots of people listening that they're getting that gut hit right now where they're like, dang it. She's right. Like, I'm busted.
Yep.
So, oh, Candy, this has been, I mean, I feel like I have been watching the History Channel, like seriously, just the rich history of not only your life, Florence Nightingale's, and what you have been able to do with your gift, your creativity. I mean, what a stamp of amazingness that you're putting on the earth. I want to thank you for your work and your service. It's amazing.
Thank you. You are kind.
Oh my goodness. So this is a little bit longer than usual, and I feel like it was completely appropriate. So I trust that the listeners are going to receive exactly what it is that they need to receive. And as you were saying, Candy, when we can get out of our way, we can go out of our comfort zone and really follow that passion. There's no end to the infinite possibilities. So thank you, Candy. Any final comments before we wrap up today?
Well, I would just like to say, if anybody really is interested in going on this tour, you don't have to be a nurse. It's just for, like I said, 20 fun people, and we have a few spots left, but we're closing it on, well, we've extended it. Now, the travel company says by December 31st, you have to have a deposit in. And so per room, that's $500. But, you know, the full fare isn't due for like 3 months after that or something like that. But we've got to know who's going for the hotels by December 31st. So I say, treat yourself to a Christmas gift and come with me.
Oh, that's perfect. So this is actually going to air on December 20th. So there will still be time for people to get their funding, whatever they need to do. And what a phenomenal way. Listen, it's the year of the nurse. What better time to go celebrate Florence's 200th birthday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, Candy, thank you so much for your time, your energy, your work. This has been such a treat. We will put everything in the show notes. And I want to thank the listeners. If this is your first time, welcome to the party. Thanks for stopping by. If this is your, if you're a repeat listener, thank you so much. I love getting comments from people and messages that's it's inspiring. You appreciate it. And please, if this has moved you in any way, go over on the iTunes and leave me a review so more people can get this in between their ears. So until next time, keep taking one step at a time and know that you're supported, even and especially in the times that you're not. Take care. Bye-bye.